Concord Talk. Aloha, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in to Concord Talk, a program where people in the Concord faith discuss various topics. Our thoughts and opinions may differ from yours, but we hope that you will enjoy and learn something new. Our diverse backgrounds, religion, thoughts, and culture to provide the richness that strengthens our community. I am Koichi Konko from the Konko Mission of Honolulu, and joining me are Amy and Edna. How are you?
Hello!
Hi!
Doing good.
Thank you. So we have a special guest with us today, Miss Heather. Welcome to Konko Talk. We are delighted to have you with us today. Hello, Heather.
Hi, should I introduce myself or?
Oh, sure, please.
So thank you very much for inviting me to join this talk. I visited Hawaii and some of the Konkokyo communities there last year in summer, and it was really a fantastic experience. Everyone was very kind, so I guess I will talk a little bit about my experience and some of my research, which is on Konkokyo at the moment, and just join the general conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So Heather is the PhD student, yeah, at a very famous university in Department of Religion, and she's studying Konkokyo. So so you visit Japan too, right?
Yeah.
The Hawaii and the Japan, a couple of churches in Kansai area and even headquarters, I think like before pandemic, so 2019? Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, thank you. So you visited Hawaii last year, the Honolulu Church, Waipahu, Wahiawa on Oahu, and Hilo on Big Island, and the Wailuku on Maui. So contact me and I kind of arranged for you to visit each church in Hawaii. So that's how we met you. So now, any question to Heather, Anna, or Amy?
Sure. So I'm very curious. I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't have an opportunity to meet with you when you came to Hawaii last year. But you did visit I'm from Wailuku Church originally. That's my family that runs the church. So I think you met with my mom and my brother, probably, I'm assuming. And I was really interested in finding out, like, why Konkokyo? How did you come to choose Konkokyo to study of all the, or to learn, or actually, what is actually your goal in your studies right now?
Yeah, so I guess it's somewhat a long story and kind of just luck, but I guess what year was it? Maybe 2018, 2019, before the pandemic, during my undergraduate degree, I studied abroad in Japan at Doshisha University in Kyoto. And one of my professors there was studying Tenrikyo.
Oh.
Yeah, and he was teaching a course on Japanese religion, and I guess because he has an interest in some of the new religions like Tenrikyo and Kurozumikyo, he talked a little bit about Konkokyo too, and I didn't know anything about I didn't know very much at all about Japanese religion in general, but I had never heard of like Konkokyo or anything in any of the books that I'd read. So when we had to pick a topic for a final paper, one of the projects that he proposed is that we could pick like a religious group, and he would help us somehow get in contact with somebody in the group, and we could interview them and ask them about, you know, what is this religion? Can you tell me about it? What's important about it to you? How do you like experience and this practice and these beliefs? So that's what I did. And I got to interview and talk to a couple people in the Kyoto area and near my where I was living for my homestay in Shigaken.
Oh, Shigaken.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there were some kind of smaller local communities, Konkokyo communities there. Yeah, and everyone was very kind, and I was really interested in what they had to say, because I didn't know anything like that existed. And I thought some of the teachings, like about okage and also I guess Konko-sama's like the gorikai and like this kind of sayings. I thought they were really interesting. So I wanted to just research more. So I did a little more interviews and talking to people visiting the headquarters in the summer after the class ended. And then I applied for PhD graduate school. I submitted this kind of interview, like my thoughts on Konkokyo for the graduate school program in the Department of Religion for Princeton. And I guess the Princeton has a legacy of kind of accepting scholars who study some Japanese new religions, like Soka Gakkai, they have done in the past. Yeah. So, my current professor is not an expert in anything related to my research, really, but because in the past, Princeton has had some graduates who study kind of related topics, he decided to accept me. And yeah, there's currently not a lot of research on Konkokyo, unfortunately, even though it is quite like an influential group, actually. And there are, I mean, as I have discovered, there are many very interesting historical facts, and Konkokyo as an organization has thankfully done a very good job documenting many things and keeping very extensive archives in the like Konkokyo Research Center, and also like individual churches and the places in Hawaii also have, you know, kept newsletters and publications and various stories also. So this actually makes it like very interesting and accessible for me as a scholar. If there were no kind of documentation, for example, then it would be very difficult to write any research. I mean, it can be done, but it can be more difficult. I'm very thankful for the kind of efforts that Konkokyo has made over the years to document things, and also that people are willing to meet with me and kind of share existing histories and memories that people have.
I see. Yeah, actually, thank you for finding us and researching us.
No, I am very thankful because I think it's a very interesting topic, and I hope that more people can learn about it. And then so my hope would be that when I finish the PhD program, which will be maybe like 3 years from now or something, then I will have a dissertation about Konkokyo. And then hopefully that would be able to then be turned into some kind of book. And then if there is a book about Konkokyo, for example, even if my book is not perfect, then obviously it cannot include everything. And there are so many topics and important things that would not be in it. Hopefully then other scholars would be able to find this book, and then they would also be able to write new research about Konkokyo, or at least to reference it and think about how their statement or their interest relates to Konkokyo. So that's kind of how I would hope that it goes. But
wow, yeah, thank you. In a sense, anything?
Oh yeah, that was really interesting. Thank you for sharing. Through your course of studying Konkokyo, were there any specific teaching that were kind of mind-blowing, or like you felt like, wow, this is really interesting? It's like, I can't find like a teaching like this in any kind of other religion. Like, what was so, is there like a teaching that was very unique, special to you?
I guess like there are many, and probably if I were to open some book or even like a newsletter, I would find like, wow, this is really interesting quote that somebody put here. And I think it's also really interesting, not only like kind of original teachings from Konko-sama, but the way that people nowadays like apply it to our lives, like for things that Konko-sama, like the original, never would have encountered, like technology and all that kind of pandemic and this kind of thing. So I also really appreciate kind of the new publications and books that come out by people kind of explaining the teachings and teaching us to apply it to modern life. But I guess one thing that really interested me when I was first learning about Konkokyo was just the way that the founder was like, he would practice in his home without going out and kind of trying to gather people and making big public spectacles. And of course, like if people do that, that's fine. But and that's how I'm familiar with lots of religions in America. It's very common, you know, for people to go knock on other people's doors, say, oh, join this, blah blah blah, and that's an expression of their faith. that's what they're taught, that they should go out and they should kind of as forcefully as they can gather people from all around and have big speeches and like in New York City have a kind of microphone so everybody can hear. So I thought that it was really interesting the way that Kunko Daijin was like, well, of course, you know, it's great if as many people as possible can know about it, but the most important thing is to practice sincerely and for other people when they have problems to come to him. And they did come to, not because he went out saying, oh, you should come to me, but because like maybe one person came and then that person was so amazed and then that person somehow ended up sharing this with another person, and it's kind of this network that grows. But it's not because of these kind of public events that many people.
It's like word of mouth advertising, yeah. When you find a restaurant in a hole in the wall and no one knows about it, one YouTuber finds out about that place and like, oh my god, the food is so good. Spread it. Thank you for sharing. Koichi Sensei, do you have any questions?
Oh yeah, so actually I kind of interested in similarity with other religions in Kongokyo. I think that's kind of wonderful to find. I personally raised in Kongokyo, I don't have too much opportunity to know other religion. I kind of know like a Christianity or Buddhism or Shinto, but I'd like to know for your perspective, like similarity. Did you see any similarity?
I guess it's like always very difficult. Also because I guess another interesting thing about Kongokyo is that it's kind of widely acknowledged that like depending on hyokai or the area, there's a kind of different lineage, and of course everybody believes the kind of main central things, but it can be slightly different depending on the area and all of these things. So I guess it's hard to generalize very much, but I'm trying to think. I guess the common comparison that people have made in scholarship, at least, is the comparison between Kongokyo and Kurozumikyo, because of the kind of close geographic area around Okayama. For Western scholars, it's very fascinating that this area was so rich in these kind of new religions that popped up. So people wonder why was it in this area that, for example, Kunko Daijin had a revelation? Like why did people in that area become so interested? And then how did it spread out of that area? So people like to look at then other religions from that area, and they might also compare some mountain ascetic practitioners who might practice some Buddhist or kind of Taoist practices. And wonder, did Kunko Daijin learn something from them, or did he maybe hear something and then think, oh, that's not right? And then is that somewhere in his sayings? Like, did he converse with any of these other people in the area? And did they reject what he had to say? Did he have any struggles against them? Did they not like what he practiced? So in that way, there are comparisons in scholarship between like Shinto and Kongokyo and other Buddhist groups then. But and then another area of comparison that people often is trying to figure out, like even worldwide, are there some kind of phenomenon that has any similarity to Kongokyo, for example, in the time period that Kunko Daijin had this revelation? Like, is this just something that happened in Okayama, Japan, or was there some kind of global phenomenon in that time period? But those kind of arguments are very difficult to make also because it's very broad. And of course, then all the details are lost. So for example, I could easily say, probably find somewhere in the world some person who had a revelation of some sort around the same time as Kunko Daijin. But whether the similarities are actually there or not, or I am just imagining them for the sake of my research, like this is a more difficult question.
Very interesting. So in your studies, as you've researched Kongokyo in different areas, I thought I'd like to hear a little bit more about, if you can share. I know there's some kind of a limit to how much you can share before you're published, but in general, like what are some of the differences and similarities that you've seen in Kongokyo practices depending on the region. So like Japan versus Hawaii versus US mainland.
I guess I haven't been to California yet. I don't know anyone in the kind of New England, East Coast area. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that much about American mainland.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, yeah, one thing that's, I think is very interesting and also difficult to think about is just the language difference. And also, I know there are some people in like Brazil and other countries mm-hmm. beyond where I've been and had a chance to talk to who are interested and who practice Konkokyo. So that's also very interesting in their language, how everything is translated.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, even with English, I know there are many materials published in English, but sometimes different language is used. And in my own research, then the question becomes what kind of terminology to use. Like, should I keep the Japanese term that I heard people in Japan using in one area, or should I use a term that I found that the Konkokyo International Center published in English? They're using that term and it's an official organization, so should I use that term? Or maybe should I use a term that maybe some of the groups in Hawaii like use to translate because they find it more fitting? So that's one struggle, because it's so widespread across the world now, and the world is very global. It can be difficult for me to think about when I research whose opinion to privilege in the work, because everybody might have a different experience. So I mean, that's one great thing that I was able to go to Hawaii even briefly, because I realized then, yeah, you know, some things are the same, but also everything can also be a little bit different.
What would you say is kind of like a major characteristic that you noticed in Hawaii particularly?
Yeah. I guess, I would like to spend more time. I'm sure all of you know much better than me, but mm-hmm. from my initial impression, one thing that stood out is kind of the atmosphere, far less formal. Like not in the sense that how can I say, in Japan they were not cold or anything like that, but mm-hmm. to me, perhaps because I'm American, it was kind of a little more nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think the atmosphere was a little bit more formal, but that may just be because the Hawaii in general, the environment and the way people interact with one another may be perceived by me at least as more casual and at home than in Japan when a guest comes. So that's one thing that I noticed is different in my experience at least.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah, the Hawaii also, some of the churches do a lot of outreach with newsletters and this kind of talk. And I guess just the nature of the way that the churches are spread out across the islands, kinds of this kind of necessitates that there's a lot of interaction that goes on, not necessarily always in person, but this kind of island network is something that is a little bit different, I think, than the dynamic between local churches in Japan that I experience.
Right, it's very much a Hawaii type of thing. Make everybody feel like part of the family, more cozy, homey. I understand what you mean by that. I get nervous going to a church in Japan versus visiting a church here. I get that.
No, we went to a grand ceremony at Gohonbu several years ago with my husband, and because he's always like he's hot, so he always wears like a short sleeve shirt and shorts. And when we went to the Gotaisai at Gohonbu, he was the only one wearing a short sleeved aloha shirt, colorful one, and shorts. So he really stood out, and everybody could immediately identify that this person is from Hawaii.
That's so clean.
He was very clean. It was very clean.
You can always tell a Hawaii person wherever they go. Yeah, you can be in the middle of Shibuya and see another Hawaii person, and I could smell them out from a mile away.
Right.
Just cause.
I think because we walk slower than Japanese.
Not only that, it's the way we dress too. I think like you're never gonna find another person outside of Hawaii wearing jeans with rubber slippers, and just doesn't.
I wear my slippers wherever I go.
Me too.
So Heather, you did you go to the headquarters as well? And when you did, were you able to see the Konko-sama?
Yeah, I did, but only before the pandemic.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, I did briefly visit the research center last year, but I wanted to, like, out of respect and because the pandemic was very bad, then I tried to limit the interaction, so I was not able to see the Konko-sama. But before the pandemic, yes, and it was a great experience, and I got to also see some of, like, the ceremonies. I think, yeah, I also was there during one of the independence festivals.
Maybe June, yeah.
Yeah, so there were many people. and yeah, I was impressed. The auditorium there was so large.
Did somebody give you, like, a guided tour around the premises, like the Gakuin and stuff like that?
Yeah. yeah, they were very kind to me, and actually one of the I was invited to kind of participate in the occasion, of course, which is very important for many Kongokyo community members, so I wouldn't want to just, you know, be there, not know what's going on, and just be interrupting anybody, like, so yeah, I was invited by somebody who I knew, and they drove me down, and so I was able to kind of stick with their family, and it was very nice. They had some kids also, so it became very casual. Because when children are there, it's just not as formal. yeah, and it's nice to see the kids meeting other people there also at the Independence Festival. And the kind of, people saying hello from all around Japan. That was also very interesting.
What was the first impression when visited Japan? I mean, the headquarters. It was pretty countryside, right?
Yeah, and I'm still, like, so amazed that there is the train station, and it's called, you know, I mean, the town Konko-cho, and there's, like, the train station, all named because of Konko-kyo. And I think because many American people have never heard of Konko-kyo, they're amazed that there could possibly be, like, a town and a whole area, and the street, like, you can walk, like, and then you see, like, the Gohonbu, and you see all these buildings, and many of the stores leading up to the center are, they sell to many people who come to visit to see Konko Daijin. And many Americans have never heard that this kind of place could exist. So I was amazed by that too. And the architecture also very impressive. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. And also very quiet, and I guess it can be very hot though.
Especially in August.
Very hot.
Yeah. Did you get to eat a Konko manju?
Yes, it's very delicious.
Yeah, like Konko manju too. It's using Konko crest, the Konko crest, but, you know, Konko kyo doesn't receive anything. Yeah, even like a taxi has a Konko crest on the top of the car. You know, seems like Konko-kyo own taxi company or, you know, the sweet shop, but no, it's just that they can use it.
I heard there's, like, custard and, like, chocolate pudding filling Konko manju as well.
Yeah, they have different ones now. Yeah. That's
so good.
Yeah, I think I always like custard the best. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I also visited the bookstore, and I bought many things. Yeah.
Do you remember which church you visited in Japan, Kansai area?
Yeah, actually, I cannot. This is one thing that I cannot say. Yeah, unfortunately. Like certain locations, like this kind of specific detail. I cannot say the specific detail, but many local kind of places, and also some of more famous ones, like around the Osaka area also. Anything that was somewhat, like, accessible from my location in Shiga who I was able to get in contact with, and who was there, and had time to I tried to, I think each place had a kind of distinctive character, also with the architecture, and how big or how small, cozy or how formal. So yeah, it's always very interesting and also nerve-wracking for me each time I visit a new
place. How about when you visit church in Japan, did you see any like a sensei? Is it like older sensei or female sensei or young sensei? I am assuming old sensei is more church. Of course, the head minister usually, you know, older sensei. But sometimes there's a young sensei too.
I think most of the sensei that I encountered in the area were male. But like you said, sometimes there were many people there for me to talk to. Like for example, one place there is the I guess the sensei, and then but also like maybe the son of that sensei, mm-hmm. who was also trained to be a sensei, so who was probably going to take over eventually. So he would kind of help with something, and I think usually in my experience the younger person was maybe more trained and comfortable with English, and so they would kind of talk to me also and help me understand some things if I couldn't understand. And then also oftentimes there would be like a wife who may also be trained to be a sensei, and she would also explain things to me in a whole other way. So kind of various people even in the same church, within the same family, who all work together to serve the community.
Koiki-sensei.
Yes.
Weren't there more female ministers than male?
I'm not sure. I didn't know exactly, but I am assume the female sensei is about the same. I mean, also there are many female head ministers, but I think because most of the time, because the husband passed away and the wife took over, only a few churches, because the husband came from outside of a conquered religion, so the daughter became head minister, and she got married with someone from not Konkokyo, so she became head minister from the beginning. I think that's the kind of few cases. So hopefully the more female sensei should become a head minister, because I think more female members more than male members, I think. So that's kind of good to have actually both sensei. It's for people easy to talk to, sometimes the female sensei or sometimes male sensei.
Because some people, they come in with female issues and men probably wouldn't
understand.
Right. So Heather, are there any other people at Princeton that are studying Konkokyo, or are you the only one?
I'm the only one that I know of, at least, unfortunately.
Oh, no, that's fortunate. We're really fortunate.
Yeah.
We're so happy.
No, I'm lucky that there are so many Konkokyo people who are very knowledgeable about Konkokyo and willing to share their knowledge with me. Otherwise, I would have no one to talk to. So I'm thankful for everyone. And it's also nice, to be able to talk to the people in Hawaii, because there's always a language barrier in Japanese for me. Like, of course, I learned Japanese and I passed the fluency exam, but especially when the head minister is a kind of older generation, mm-hmm. and also in certain areas, there's a dialect, it can be very difficult for me. Yeah. And like I said, also with translation things, it's nice to have somebody who is more familiar with the English side of Kokyo.
Mm-hmm. So next time when you visit Japan, you can hire one of us. We can help you.
Please help me. Yeah.
So I'm sorry, was there a particular focus on the aspect of Konkokyo in your research that you're focusing on, or is it just Konkokyo in general?
Yeah. So of course, naturally, Konkokyo is such a big topic. I cannot talk about all of it. I cannot even begin to even think about all of it. So I guess my research at the moment is, because it can change, of course. but I'm currently interested in the kind of 1900s through the present And that's very broad, but specifically focusing on World War II and how people today remember that. So because there are many studies, for example, about how Japanese people, ordinary people, experience the war and various suffering and trauma, or soldiers going to war, but they don't usually talk specifically about how, if they had a religion, if they were Buddhist or something, like, did that affect experience? Did they, when they went home, did they try to cope with the suffering along with their religious community, or did they not think about that at all? So I'm interested in specifically how Konkokyo communities remember the war today. And so that's one part. And the other part is, of course, I have to add historical detail. So I need to actually kind of narrate the historical developments of Konkokyo. Like, for instance, in Hawaii, if I write about Hawaii, then I have to at least briefly give an outline of how the churches came to exist and things like
that. Mm-hmm. So you'll probably delve into, well, in Hawaii's case, I'm sure it happened on the mainland as well, but during World War II, they were interned and they were targeted specifically, that our ministers were targeted specifically because of being leaders of Japanese religions. And that wasn't, I mean, I guess, yeah, during that time they were a target. So they were forced into internment camps. Honolulu Church's founding minister actually has a really, I think, interesting story of how Kodama sensei was put into the internment camp. Correct me if I'm wrong, Koichi sensei, but, and then his wife took over, but could not practice outrightly. And so she would have sessions in her kitchen, gather members in her kitchen and just kind of make it seem like they're just, you know, she's not preaching or anything, but they're just gathering. And that's how they kind of, to my understanding, that's how they kind of survived the war years and things like that. So I think you'll find a lot of really interesting stories about wartime. Yeah, especially in Hawaii, especially in and on the mainland, I'm sure U.S. mainland. It'd be really interesting to find out what the Japanese ministers take, like what their experience was during World War II. I have an uncle that was a kamikaze pilot, and he was supposed to fly. And the day he was scheduled to fly is when the war ended.
Wow. So,
yeah, that was Yoshi.
Mm-hmm. Yoshi,
uncle. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. And then like I know my grandpa at Futsukaichi Church, he was the former head minister. He must have had a ton of war stories that I unfortunately never asked him about. But yeah, they used the church. I know they used the church as kind of a place for the immediate community around the church, for people to gather and kind of seek shelter. A lot of times it was a bigger building for them to gather in. And so I know my grandma used to cook meals and things like that for people who would seek shelter, oftentimes from the war. And it was a really hard time, you know, food scarce and all that during that time. So yeah, it'd be fascinating to find out more stories about things like that. Yeah.
Heather, did you go to the Kongo Church of Hilo?
Oh, yeah.
Did the sensei talk about Reverend Nishida when he got interned, and I guess the wife was watching the church with the children, and they had to turn off all the lights at nighttime, mm-hmm. and they had to blacken the windows and things. And they did that. It's like they weren't turning on any lights, but from above, like a copter or something, they can see that the church was glowing. And so like the FBI would come and investigate it, but it's like they had their lights off, but it was just glowing. And why? So that's one of the famous stories of that church. And also with one of our church members, who he passed away already, but he was in the 100th Battalion, and before he went to the war, he went to the church and received the Goshimai, the sacred rice packet, and he took it with him, and he kept it on him throughout the whole war. And he came back alive. On a battlefield, he was the only one standing alive. Everyone else was shot. Yeah, that's one of the stories that he shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always enjoy hearing kind of memories and stories. And yeah, it's very interesting. It's not like like when you read many of the books about the war experience, they don't usually tell stories like that. But obviously, some people have these experiences. So mm-hmm. I think it shows a whole other kind of understanding of the war experience for some people. And also, for example, like people who were interned in Konkokyo, and people who kept practicing even though what's forbidden, like this is also another story that many people do not tell and people don't know about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope to keep talking to people and kind of learning more stories as I continue my research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my grandmother turned to 100 years old March 30th this year, and she got married my grandfather, but I think my grandfather have to went to war, and my grandmother came from Tokyo, raised in Tokyo, and at the time moved to Konko town, the very countryside, and she got married, but my grandfather went to war, so she's a stranger and they have to live with, you know, parents and parents-in-law. Parents alone, you know, I think she had interesting experiences. Yeah. My grandfather is a son of the third Konko-sama. And at the time, the Japan government said, if you are successor of the religion, you don't need to go to war. But other than that, you have to go. So my grandfather was son of the Konko-sama, but he was the third son, and he went to the China. Mm-hmm. So that I was told, and he tried to be good friend with Chinese people in China, the Chinese children. So he was really good at teaching any kind of the game or something like that. So he was able to communicate with Chinese children and have a good time. That's what I was told.
Another story I want to share about the war was, this came from Tao Sensei, Reverend Tao Takahashi, who's the headmaster of Konko Church of San Diego. And he not too long ago found out that his aunt, Reverend Haruko Takahashi, who was the founding minister of our church in Wahiwa, when she was detained at the internment campsite, she tried to sign up for parole. Three times. She requested for parole three times. And the first time she applied, she was told, well, if you give up your faith, we will release. And she was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then she signed up again. She requested again. And they were saying, okay, we will release you, but you have to give up your faith. And she was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the third time she requested for parole, they were able to release her. And she didn't have to give up her faith. So I'm really, that really touched me. I got really like chicken skin when I heard that story of how determined she was, how sincere her faith was in Kamisama and in Konkokyo. And if she didn't do that, you know, people can easily give up, but she didn't. And she was very persistent and she had a strong faith in Kamisama. So that's why the church exists today. If she didn't do that, then, you know, I wouldn't even be here. All the little things, and man, it was impressive, very impressive.
Yeah, Todd Sensei would be a good person to ask about wartime experiences. He did a lot, he's done a lot of research. He continues to do a lot of research even now.
Oh, I think you did speak to Todd Sensei when you came.
Yes.
It's like you came to visit Hawaii at the perfect timing, and you were here at the same time. So I was like, I messaged him. I was like, Todd Sensei, can you come? Because Heather's going to come in, and I know you'd be an excellent resource person. And then he was able to do so. No, they all worked out.
Yeah, no, it was really great. And I hope that, I mean, I hope to go to Hawaii again and also to be able to go to California. Mm-hmm. But especially for Hawaii to be able to stay longer, maybe in the summer, like some future summer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually very interesting because originally, I guess my department, they were not so excited about me visiting Hawaii. They were kind of like, maybe you just want to go on vacation. Like, what does Hawaii have to do with Konkokyo in Japan? But when I kind of shared some experiences and some stories, and also talked a little bit about like the internment and these kind of stories of strong faith, and some people who experienced some incredible things, they were suddenly like, oh, actually, that's fantastic. That's, Hawaii is certainly a very important part of this story.
Yeah, it
must be in your dissertation.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, and certainly like also talking to our friend Todd and everybody being able to go to the different churches thanks to everybody's efforts to help me plan the trip. Yeah, it was all thanks to that. And so many great things happened just miraculously.
Oh, really?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Do you have any miracle that you want to share?
No, it was just that like it seemed like many things worked out very well, and also it was like, oh, Todd is there, and everything just like I had never been to Hawaii before, and also many things, I guess it's not so lucky, it's just that people were very kind to me, like, oh, I can help drive you here, and I bought this food and it's delicious. So I was able to try many foods and learn so many things about Hawaii that I never would have experienced if I were just there to go to a beach or something.
Man, we call that okage.
Mm-hmm.
Divine blessings. Good, good.
Did you know Professor Dr. Kishimoto, Hideo Kishimoto, a long time ago, he helped the Konkokyo, and he was an interpreter for the
kind of allied occupation, the government.
Mm-hmm. GHQ, we call it GHQ. Yeah. So the Konkokyo asked him how the GHQ interviewed all religions at the time, because they thought that religion is one of the important mother. Japan became like a war attack to the other country kind of thing. So they interview and they interview Konkokyo. So they ask Dr. Kishimoto, what kind we should prepare for this interview, something like that. And Dr. Kishimoto told them, just be honest, tell everything. So Konkokyo, the representative of Konkokyo, said everything, because the Konkokyo supported the war at the time, because you have to do so, otherwise the government didn't happy. So even like Konkokyo donated like Sentoki, what you call in Sentoki, the battle.
Fighter jets.
So they taught everything. So I think that helps the Konkokyo, because GHQ have a kind of good impression that because GHQ researched everything. They knew everything already. So even though you hide it, they knew, you know. So they taught everything, even though it's not good for Konkokyo as a religion, you know, you're supposed to help people, but sometimes did opposite. But Konkokyo as an organization, totally separate. You want to save it. You want to say that you're doing wrong, you know, government, Japan, you're doing wrong, you know, war is not good, but you cannot tell sometimes the dilemma. So there's an interesting story, many interesting stories. But anyway, yeah, yes, Heather, yes.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, yeah, and like from my experience at least, it's one interesting thing that I am also thinking about is how this kind of approach to like being honest and being not always, but often quite not necessarily cooperative, but not trying to start fights with whoever is in power for the government. I think this has, in my opinion, this has somewhat helped Konkokyo kind of survive through kind of many changes in the 1900s about all these kinds of rules, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. It was very hard for some other organizations, and of course also difficult for Konkokyo. But when we look at some of the histories of some other religious organizations in Japan, Konkokyo as an organization had difficulties, but despite those difficulties, I guess was less damaged, not as harshly persecuted, despite having many difficulties. So I think this may also be because Konkokyo and Konko Daijin also kind of set a precedent that even if you don't agree with the government or something, you know, it's not the point to go out and start fights. So yeah, that's one thing I'm thinking about, because as a scholar, I have to write a little bit about the relationship between the organization and the state. So, for example, Konkokyo's history is very different from Omotokyo. Why, right? So, so then I have to think about that as well. But from the American standpoint also, in the post-war period, because Konkokyo had such a good interaction with Kishimoto Hideo and the GHQ. The scholarship on Konkokyo, there's not very much, like I said, but it is often very positive. And it will say things like, oh, Konkokyo is this organization and they're very open and very kind and peaceful people and they don't cause very many problems. So that's very interesting. And even now, I think for Western scholars, at least, Konkokyo has a kind of safe and open reputation, has very good reputation. So this is, of course, you know, reassuring for me, and it has been true in my experience. Nobody has been mean to me or anything like that. And when I do the research, because everybody is very honest, like, I don't have to fear or anything. And I'm very thankful for everybody sharing things with me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Before we finish, do you have any question to us?
I guess, yeah. So I am still in the middle of my program. So I have much more work to do with my professors and kind of preparation that is expected of me. But I will definitely be going to Japan again. And like I said, I also want to go back to Hawaii and talk to everybody again. And I'm still collecting stories and hope to talk to more people. So if you would like to share anything with me, or you know people who would be willing to share something, please, you can always contact me. And if you have any questions also about my research, or you want to correct something you said, or you have some opinion you would like to share with me, that's also very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Heather, for joining our podcast program, the Konko Talk, and share your thought. Thank you very much. I think we cover a lot. Thank you very much. So, I think we can finish. But thank you very much. I have a line here. Where is it? So thank you very much for joining us on this exciting journey through to this topic. We truly appreciate your time and support, and we hope you enjoy our conversation as much as we did. Remember to subscribe to our podcast in the YouTube so you never miss an episode. And please share it with your friends and family. If you have any comment, question, or suggestion for future episodes, feel free to reach out to us by email at konkotalk@gmail.com. Until next time, take care and stay curious. This is Konko Talk. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Mata aimashou.
Bye.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you, Heather.
Okay.